nation, right at the start of everything that's new. One little spark lights up for you. Imagination, imagination. A dream can be a dream come true. With just that spark from me and you. One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation, right at the start of everything that's new. One little spark lights up for you. Imagination, imagination. A dream can be a dream come true. With just that spark from me and you.
This is The Storyteller, bringing you stories and music from around the world and from many cultures. I'm Natalie Harris. The Storytellers cannot be made possible without the generous contributions of KZFR members and by CORE, Community Options for Resources in Education, a personalized learning California charter school accredited by the Western Association of Schools and Colleges. CORE offers a unique blend of classroom and non-classroom public education model based on the needs and interests of each individual student. Information is available on the web at coretca.org or by calling 894-3952. So that was one little spark by the Sherman Brothers, and that's part of a ride in Walt Disney World and it's about Figment, and it's like Figment of the imagination, and so Disney turned it into a little purple dragon. It's really cute. You should go look up and see what Figment looks like, because he's absolutely adorable. And so obviously imagination inspires many things, and it inspires the books that I read, the art that we see, the songs that we hear, so many different things. And so my theme for this week is children's books written by animators. Because last Saturday, I got to tour the Walt Disney Studios, and it was so amazing, really cool. And obviously, as you know, I love animation in Disney and Pixar, so I want to share a little bit of that with you. And so my first book is written by Bill Peet, and he was a sketch artist for Disney, and he worked on some of the most beloved films such as Fantasia, 101 Dalmatians, and Peter Pan, which, as you know, is one of my all-time favorite Disney movies ever. So he has written over 30 children's books since then. So here is Kermit the Hermit by Bill Peet. In Monterey Bay, there's a jumble of rocks stacked up like a castle across from the dock. The king of this castle, an old crab called Kermit, lived all by himself in a cave like a hermit. There was never a crab who was one half as selfish or one-tenth as mean as this crusty old shellfish. What made Kermit greedy and grumpy that way was the shortage of food everywhere in the bay, for a crab must depend on what he can find, small scraps and tidbits of any old kind. To Kermit each day meant a fight for survival with every last seagull and crab as a rival. Unless it is cured, sometimes greediness grows. Where it finally stops, alas, nobody knows. And before very long, Kermit grabbed everything, from a rusty padlock to a ball of kite string, a broken jackknife, a pair of old shoes, things that a crab couldn't possibly use. And his cave was soon crammed without one inch to spare. There was just enough space left for Kermit in there. Like any old miser, he wanted a lot of something or other, he didn't care what. And he'd have been greedy the rest of his days if an odd twist of fate hadn't changed Kermit's ways. This remarkable change in old Kermit began with an everyday thing, just a battered tin can. A pork and bean can that had been tossed away far out in the sand dunes that bordered the bay. The crumpled tin lid caught the sun's bright reflection, which caused it to sparkle in every direction. And since the old miser had never been told that bright things that glitter are not always gold, he supposed that it must be some valuable thing that someone had lost, a gold watch or a ring. So he crawled up the rocks and out onto the land and over the hilly broad stretches of land of sand. And not until Kermit was next to his prize did he realize a trick had been played on his eyes. "Why, you phony tin faker, you," growled the old grump, "rumble like you should be tossed in a dump." Then just as he turned to start back for the bay, the crab spied a dog who was heading his way. The dog was exploring and trying out smells, sniffing at driftwood and empty clam shells. One sniff at the can told him what had been in it, so he then turned to sniff at old Kermit a minute. In one grab, the crab gave the dog a sharp nip on his sensitive nose, and he let out a yip. "That'll teach you," he snapped, "to go snipping at me." Then he turned himself round to head back for the sea. But the dog made a leap, seized the crab in his jaws, by the back of the shell beyond reach of the claws. "Put me down," cried the crab. "Put me down, you big brute, or I'll give you another good pinch on the snoot." But the dog paid no heed to old Kermit's command. He set to work digging a hole in the sand. The crab guessed at once it was not just a cave. It was going straight down, so it must be a grave. "What a horrible end," Kermit said with a groan, "to be buried alive like a worthless old bone." Then just as the dog dropped the crab in the hole, a boy happened by with a long fishing pole. "You old hound," he scolded, "what a mean thing to do. Now how would you like it if I buried you? You're too nice a dog to do something like that." Then he scooped up the crab in his tattered straw hat, trotted off down the beach to the edge of the sea, and flipping his hat, he set old Kermit free. With a sigh of relief, the old crab went his way on back to his castle of rocks in the bay. If it weren't for the boy, he just had to admit there'd be no tomorrow. That would have been it. "I'll reward my young friends, little Kermit, that's what, with all my life savings, every last thing I've got. But things like old shoes or a broken jackknife can never repay him for saving my life. The ideal reward would be a new bike. There's something I'm sure that a small boy would like. And how can a crab ever buy a bicycle without any money, not even a nickel?" He pondered the problem the whole afternoon, then far into the night by the light of the moon. But try as he might, alas and alack, he thought of no way he could pay the boy back. The next afternoon, as he crawled on the rocks, Kermit spotted the boy on the end of the docks. The very same boy, the old crab could tell that, by the faded striped shirt and the tattered straw hat. He had been lulled to sleep by the warm summer breeze, with his fishing pole propped on his patched trouser knees. "I might help him to catch a big fish," Kermit thought, "if there's any big fish around here to be caught." Of course, he must find the boy's baited hook, so he scrambled out into the bay for a look. And just a few yards from the pilings, he found it, with the schoolhouse small minnows all swarming around it. Lightly gripping the line just below the lead weight, Kermit tiptoed along, gently dragging the bait. If he happened to give it the least little jerk, the boy would reel in and his plan wouldn't work. So Kermit kept on till he came to a ledge. There he stopped to peer cautiously over the edge. Then reaching as far as he could with his claws, he lowered the bait toward a halibut's jaws. The big fish took a look, and in one mighty scoop, both the worm and the hook disappeared in one gloop. When he found he'd been hooked, he took off with a streak, and the line, which was really too flimsy and weak, suddenly snapped from the force of the shock somewhere behind Kermit back near the dock. He was on his own now, with no one to help, and off he went flying through tangles of kelp. Up over the waves he went floppity-flip, straight out of the bay on a wild, foamy trip. Then somewhere far out in the broad, rolling sea, the furious fish finally fought his way free. Way out in the deep water, the crab couldn't crawl, but all he could do was to let himself fall. And Kermit went tumbling down in slow motion into the dark, gloomy depths of the ocean, to the soft, sandy floor where he let with a plunk, near the place where an old pirate ship had been sunk. The huge hole had been smashed, all the sails ripped and tattered, and in every direction the cargo was scattered. "I imagine," said Kermit, "I'm not safe down here. There's much more to this place than the weird atmosphere. Some creature was watching," the old crab could tell, by the cold, creepy feeling that ran through his shell. Crouching flat in the sand, he peered into the dark. He suddenly saw it, a monstrous blue shark. As the shark wheeled around for a head-on attack, Kermit spied an old chest that was open a crack, and got there a second before the shark did, and in a wild scramble squeezed under the lid. Pushing hard with his snout, the big fish tried his best to force at the lid of the heavy old chest. He lunged with the fury and all the brute strength of his broad fins and tail and his 20-foot length. But the lance double hinges were solid with rust and a century's thickness of barnacle crust. So the crab stayed within while the shark stayed without. All he got for his pains was a Bradley bruised snout. And he finally turned tail, then away he went tearing in search of a school of sardines or some herring. Not until he was sure the big shark was long gone did Kermit look down to see what he sat on. The old chest was filled pretty near to the top with a heap of gold pieces that made his eyes pop. "How strange," Kermit muttered. "No one's found it before. It can't be much more than 2 miles from shore. But anyway, all this gold's mine now, if I just haul it back to my castle somehow." With a coin in each claw, he set out for the bay, with his life in great danger each step of the way. Not only the shark, other big fish as well, can easily bite through a crab's crusty shell. To avoid being caught by these crab-hungry enemies, he scuttled behind the dense clumps of anemones. Here the deep shadows were mostly blue-green, so a bluish-green crab there could scarcely be seen. Every day for 3 months, Kermit made the round trip, returning each time with 2 coins in his grip. To make room for the treasure, he emptied his cave of the rumble he'd gone through such trouble to save. After stacking the gold into one gleaming pile, his crusty face cracked in a satisfied smile. He was thinking of all the great pleasure and fun such a treasure would bring to a certain someone. Then he crawled from his cave for a view of the bay in hopes that he'd find his young friend there that day. Since the dock was deserted, he looked toward the shore, where he spied some small boys, half a dozen or more. Tall ones and scrawny ones, one who was fat, but not one of them wore a striped shirt or straw hat. But his young friend might wear something else altogether, since the winter had come with its cold, foggy weather. But anyway, Kermit thought, what could I do? Just walk up and say, here's a present for you? Then he heaved such a deep and most sorrowful sigh, he attracted a pelican roosting nearby. Now cheer up, old fellow, the bird began, smiling as only a pelican can. If you got a problem, please let me suggest you tell it to me and get the thing off your chest. No one could resist such a friendly big smile, so the crab told his tale to him after a while. Showed all of the gold when he came to the end, then tried to describe his heroic young friend. That boy, said the bird, is familiar to me. Some people watch birds. I watch people, you see. The lad has two sisters and also one brother, and then I'm quite certain a father and mother. They live in a very small three-room red shack in the south part of town beside the train track. I could carry the treasure there inside my beak, but I'd swallow it all, for my beak has a leak. So if you would like, I'll just give you a lift, besides you're the one to deliver the gift. And so with two gold pieces tight in his grip, Kermit took off on his first flying trip. Across the broad bay in one breathtaking swoop, away the way through the dense fog as thick as pea soup. By the time Kermit got up the nerve to look down, the big bird was soaring out over the town. Below was a small cottage painted barn red beside the train track, as the pelican said. That poor people lived there was easy to see, for it was the one house without a TV. As the pelican came to a fluttering stop alongside the chimney, he let the coins drop. They fell to the bottom, the two friends could tell, for the pot-bellied stove went kerbong like a bell. Then inside the house great excitement broke out. Why, it's gold! It's real gold! They heard somebody shout. The family ran out to find what it could be, but discovered the fog had rolled in from the sea. A ghostly white curtain closed in everywhere, so they never caught sight of whoever was there. The high-flying crab in the pelican's beak brought the family fortune inside of a week. Soon they had a TV set and all sorts of toys, such as dolls for the daughters and bikes for the boys. All the rest of the gold, which was quite an amount, they set safely aside in a savings account. For the wise father said, it is not every day that a fortune is dropped down our chimney that way. The end. Isn't that a sweet story? I love it so much. It has a great meaning, don't you think? So this next song is one of my favorites, and it also kind of ties in where Kermit lives, which is the ocean. Here's Catch a Wave by the Beach Boys.
Catch a wave and you're sitting on top of the world. Don't be afraid to try the greatest sport around. Catch a wave and you're sitting on top of the world. Not just a bit, cause it's been going on so long. Catch a wave, catch a wave.
Welcome back to The Storytellers. I'm Natalie Harris. So in case you're just joining us, we are doing children's books by animators because I recently just went to go tour the Walt Disney Animation Studios, which was the best thing ever. And so this next story is really cute and really funny. And it was written by Dan Kroll. He didn't say what company he worked for, but he worked in animated television and film as a development artist. So this next story is called The Great Lollipop Caper by Dan Kroll. For those of you who don't know, a caper is a tiny pickled sourpuss who lives in a jar in your fridge and is never eaten by children. Of course, everyone knows what a lollipop is, which is why Mr. Caper is so angry. Mr. Caper never liked lollipop. Sure, adults admire Mr. Caper's acidic earthiness. Yoo-hoo, Mr. Caper, we love you. Hey, Mr. Caper, you're A-okay in my book. Yeah, Mr. Caper, we love you. But Mr. Caper didn't care about adults. Bah, he said. There must be a way to make the children appreciate my complex flavor. I know what I have to do. Disguised as a harmless pea, Mr. Caper sneaks into the lollipop factory. You sure you're not a caper? Said the security guard. Yeah, said Mr. Caper. Okay, then. I just need to make sure every lollipop tastes like capers. Then all the children of the world will learn to love me. It worked, as he poured the solution that tasted just like Mr. Caper. Soon, Mr. Caper's new flavor of lollipop was being packed up and sent all over the world. It went to China and France and Florida and Egypt. But when the children ate the new caper-flavored lollipops, something strange and unexpected happened. They became as bitter and sour as Mr. Caper tasted. They started acting in the most appalling ways. Mr. Caper's plan had backfired. Now the adults didn't like him either. I'm very disappointed in you, one said. Bad caper. I used to like capers. But I just wanted everyone to love me, said Mr. Caper. Now no one liked Mr. Caper. He was all alone. Howdy, Mr. Caper. What's wrong? Said the lollipop. I just wanted to make everyone love me as much as they love you, but instead I ruined everything. Now nobody likes me, said Mr. Caper. It's okay, Mr. Caper. I think I know what to do. Really? Hey, kids, anyone wants some? Mr. Lollipop started to say. Candy! All the kids cried. After one delicious taste, the children of the world instantly changed back into their former sweet selves. The day was saved. Except, Lollipop, oh no, he's gone. Don't worry about me. One trip to the Lollipop Factory and I'll be as good as new. Well, at least the children are sweet again, but now I guess I'm stuck being sour and alone, said Mr. Caper. Aw, don't be silly, Mr. Caper. Sure, those kids love me now, but when they grow up, guess who they're going to be crazy about? You! Then won't you be lonely? Nah, they'll be new kids for me by then. Well, I sure will be glad when that day comes. I miss the grown-ups. I'm awfully sorry for what I did. I have a feeling everything is going to be okay. Aw, Mr. Caper, it's okay, said one adult. We missed you, Mr. Caper. We couldn't stay mad at you. Welcome back. And on that day, Mr. Caper learned how sweet being earthy and acidic could be. The end. So this next song, so wasn't that really funny? And this next song is also pretty funny too. It's really iconic and it definitely gets stuck in my head all the time. So here is Lollipop by the Cordettes.
Lollipop, lollipop, oh lollipop, lollipop, oh lollipop, lollipop, oh lollipop, lollipop, oh lollipop, 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 lollipop
boom, 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 boom.
Crazy way you thrill me, tell you why. Just like the lightning from the sky. He loves to kiss me till I can't see straight. Gee, my lollipop is great. I call him lollipop, lollipop, oh, lolly, 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 lollipop, lollipop, oh, lolly, 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 lollipop, lollipop, oh, lolly, 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 lollipop.
Boom, boom, boom.
Welcome back to The Storytellers. I'm Natalie Harris. So in case you're just joining us, we are doing children's books by animators because I recently just went to Burbank to the Walt Disney Animation Studios, which was really, really cool. And also because of this, actually on Mother's Day weekend, I went to San Francisco and I got to hear Mike Wu, who wrote his first children's book called Ellie. And he is an animator for Pixar. He has worked on beloved movies called The Incredibles, Ratatouille, Up, and Toy Story 3. And so this is his first children's book. It's really good. I love the story so much. And I highly recommend going buying it or just looking at the pictures because it's incredible. He did watercolor, and so it looks absolutely beautiful. So here is Ellie by Mike Wu. On a bright winter day when Ellie was just finishing her lunch, the zookeeper came by with an announcement. "Gather round," Walt called. "I have some news." "It is a sad day," he said. "The zoo was closing." The animals were heartbroken. "There must be something we can do," Ellie the elephant whispered to her friends. "The zoo is our home."
"Perhaps we can spruce it up a bit," Jared the ape suggested. Jared always had good ideas.
"I'll prune the trees, Lucy," the giraffe said, nibbling a leaf.
"If only my trunk were longer," said Ellie.
"I'll move this rock," Jared huffed, clearing it off the path.
"If only my muscles were bigger," said Ellie.
"We've already cleaned here," said the monkeys.
"What can I do to help?" Ellie wondered.
It seemed like everyone had a talent. Everyone but Ellie.
Ellie thought she'd ask Walt to give her a job, but he was busy too.
When the monkeys called him away, Ellie picked up the strange object he'd been holding. It had smooth wood on one side and prickly hairs on the other.
It was a paintbrush.
Ellie gave it a try.
When Walt returned and saw her creation, a beautiful sunflower, he sprinted back down the path without a word.
Had she ruined the wall?
Soon she heard a wagon with the squeaky wheel turn the corner. It was full of paint.
Maybe Walt didn't like her painting.
Ellie added color here and a rainbow there.
There were so many walls to color and so many colors to try. Ellie painted all of her friends. She painted the tallest ones, the smartest, and the quietest ones.
Word spread of Ellie's talents.
People came from all over the city to have their portraits painted. Some came with balloons, others came with awards. Ellie even painted Mr. Mayor with a smile.
Soon people from around the world came to see Ellie, the remarkable painting elephant.
Lucy hosted the crowds as they arrived at the zoo.
Jared led tours through Ellie's art gallery.
And on a bright spring day, with crowds cheering him on, Walt declared, "We are open for good. Thanks to Ellie." The end.
Isn't that an extremely sweet story? I just love the idea of Ellie, and I really hope you create some more stories with Ellie because I think it's an incredibly good idea. And it was, in case you wanted to know, here's a little fact about the zookeeper. His name is Walt, right? And it's named after Walt Disney, which I think is really cool that he dedicated a character to Walt Disney, who a lot of the animators look up to. So I really hope you enjoyed tonight's theme and that you enjoyed everything that I shared with you tonight. It's always fun finding new themes for all of you. And remember, the Storytellers cannot be made possible without the generous contributions of KZFR members and by Floral Native Nursery and Restoration, Where the Wild Things Grow, a California native nursery committed to the use of sustainable native plants for landscaping and restoration projects. For information about native plants and drought-tolerant landscape design, visit Floral Native Nursery and Restoration at 2511 Floral Avenue or call 892-2511 online at floralnativenursery.com. And make sure to stay tuned for LA Sounds, Señor Felipe.
So have you guys ever been to the zoo? Have you been to one like Ellie? I mean, I haven't seen an elephant paint before, but that sure would be cool. I mean, I've seen videos, but nothing in particular. But my sister likes to see. So this next song is going to the zoo by Peter, Paul, and Mary. And they describe some of the animals that they see. See you next time.
Daddy's taking us to the zoo tomorrow. Zoo tomorrow, zoo tomorrow. Daddy's taking us to the zoo tomorrow, and we can stay all day. We're going to the
zoo, zoo, zoo. How about you, you, you? You can come too, too, too. We're going to the zoo, zoo, zoo.
See the elephant with a long trunk swinging, great big ears and a long trunk swinging, snuffing up peanuts with a long trunk swinging, and we can stay all day. We're going to they're scritch, scritch, scratching, jumping around and scritch, scritch, scratching, hanging by the long tail, and we can stay all day. We're going to the zoo. There's a big black bear, he's a huff, huff, a puffin. His coat's too heavy, he's a huff, huff, a puffin. Don't get too near the huff, huff, a puffin, or you won't stay all day. We're going to the zoo. And a fish and a honk, 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 and little tiny seals all
honk, honk, honk,
and we can stay all day. We're going to the
zoo, zoo, zoo. How about you, you, you? We can go to the zoo.
Well, we stayed all day and I'm getting sleepy, sitting in the car getting sleep, sleep, sleepy. Home already and I'm sleep, 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 because we have stayed all day. We've been to the zoo.
Killing me.